Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, Garrett Wong, who in 2012 played the outgoing crew captain in the film Rock Jocks, and myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast and lots more bonus material by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers.
Robbie, hello.
Rock Jocks, huh?
I know.
What was that? 2012.
Yeah, that was like another independent film. I was the king of independent films at some point. I was just doing one after the other. It was kind of like a team of nerds that's their whole job is sort of to try to repel asteroids that are kind of coming into Earth's trajectory kind of a thing, you know? So we're kind of like a, I don't know, a Star Wars program. Yeah, where we're sort of that. Our whole thing is we're a group of nerds and I'm the day shift leader or whatever. And then after we're done, we leave, we hand it off to the next shift, and the next shift is the main cast. So this is a supporting character. Yeah. So had a lot of fun doing it. Yeah. Sounds like,
who else was in it?
Gosh, the queen of the nerds, the redhead gal. Oh my
God. Oh, Felicia Day.
Yes. Felicia Day. I always forget her name.
I'm the queen of the nerds.
The queen of the nerds.
I'm like, I know who you're talking about.
That's funny. Love Felicia Day. Great, great, great person. But with my old age, I forget everyone's name. So
yeah, same.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds fun.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So this week we are going to rewatch, or maybe watch for the first time.
Yes.
The Void.
The Void.
The Void is our episode this week.
I'm so excited. It's so interesting because, you know, when we started this whole podcast, I kept saying, I saw everything. I saw every episode. But season 7, it's like a new show to me. It really is.
Wow.
So many episodes that I did not see in their entirety. I do remember filming certain scenes, you know.
Yeah. But
it's like a new
show. The fun thing about this rewatch is like we're both remembering things that are deep in our brain somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
These like moments or scenes or days of filming, a little details. So, well, let's go watch The Void.
Okay.
And we will be right back with our discussion and recap of the episode, The Void.
See you soon, everyone. We are back from watching The Void.
Wow. We went into The Void.
We did go into the void. We were such in the void. I had to take a shower and I've done my hair up nice, so I'm not wearing my baseball
cap
anymore.
That's what the void does to you. You got to shower after you.
I did have to shower after the void.
Encounter the void.
Okay.
Definitely you need a shower.
Here's my haiku.
Yes.
I'm just jumping right into it. Here's my haiku for the void. Stars have gone astray. Ship raiding to stay alive. Team up to get out.
Oh, I like the last line.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Good last line. Okay, here's our limerick for The Void. It goes a little something like this. Into the void, Voyager finds it's arrived, and the new neighbor's charms have taken a nosedive. Fatome's Doc's new best friend, Janeway's goal at the end is those that work together will surely survive.
Yeah, you pulled it together very nicely at the end.
Yeah.
I didn't know where you were going for a second. I'm like, oh my gosh,
either.
Maybe he's lost, but then you found your way.
I found my way. Yeah, you've got to work together to survive. That's Janeway knows how to do it.
Oh my goodness.
So The Void, teleplay by Rafe Green, James Caan, story by Rafe Green and Ken Biller, directed by Mike Vahar. I think
you got that right. Go buy a lottery ticket. Go buy a lottery ticket. But yes, you got the Vahar right. And did either of us get the writer correct? I don't think so.
I don't think so. No.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah, very interesting story. It had some really great moments. I thought Mike did a great job. Loved Mike Vahar. Always loved Mike Vahar.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the cast.
Sure. Guest stars, Robin Sachs, who played General Valen. His very first credit is a film called Vampire Circus, 1972. Now, he also has a TV credit, which is 1972. So I gave both. The TV credit is a TV show called Love and Mr. Lewisham. So I think this might be a British show, possibly.
Oh, yes, probably.
Yes, Robin passed away, unfortunately, at the age of 61, at the tender age of 61 in 2013.
Young man,
really. Yeah.
So and Robin played, I'm sorry, Robin played.
General Valen. He's the first alien in the void that we see on the view screen. Sure. He comes over to us. He's got the lines on his face, you know, the sort of bronzish
Cardassian makeup. Almost.
Yeah, a little, definitely.
A little Cardassian-ish. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Paul Wilson, who played Loquar.
I love those guys. Loquar. He was the hippopotamus looking ones, right?
Yeah, he's the more, yes.
Yeah, but they look like
they were the they aliens. Look like a hippopotamus. Okay. Do you recognize those aliens?
Yeah, they were what were they called? The
watchers or the viewers.
Watchers,
they
had an assignment watch and observe. Yes,
that race, which I've forgotten the name, but those are cool aliens, definitely.
Love those aliens. Mm-hmm.
Very first credit for Mr. Wilson, who played Loquar, is a 1970 film by the name of The Strawberry Statement.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a very well-known film, but yes, but that's the very first credit. Okay. Scott Lawrence, who played Garen. Now, Garen was
Scott
the alien.
Lawrence.
Yeah,
he's
Scott Lawrence
awesome.
Was the one in the red, you know, the aliens that had the red uniform.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the whole time I was watching this episode, I kept saying, why is Scott Lawrence so familiar to me? Well, I put two and two together while I was doing credits. Scott Lawrence looks like the grown-up adult version of the young actor that played Webster.
Maybe
Emmanuel Lewis. Although Emmanuel Lewis now as an adult does not look anything like Scott Lawrence, because Emmanuel Lewis has some type of liver, some type of medical or health condition which prevents him from growing to a full size, to adult size. But if he was not afflicted with such medical ailment or condition, he would look like Scott Lawrence.
I also read Scott Lawrence. His voice sounded so familiar.
Okay.
And I realized he did the Darth Vader voice for all the Star Wars.
He does
James Earl Jones' voice on the video games.
Yeah.
And James Earl Jones was his in an episode of LA Law with him, right?
Oh my goodness. Look at you. Did you do the research on this or do you know him?
Sometimes he was so familiar. I had to look up his
That's
credit.
Why you looked it up.
He's
yeah.
the one that I looked up.
Yeah.
Because I was how do I know this guy? But he was awesome.
Well, when I was looking at his stuff, I saw, you know, sometimes at the bottom of the credits, you see a thing that a section that says self. Like if you were interviewed for something and they produced it and aired it, then you would have a credit like self. Yeah. And he had a credit for self for Star Wars Celebration. And I was like, what? Because I'm a big Star Wars fan. So and Celebration is the massive convention that happens every year that's sanctioned by Lucas. And I was like, wait a minute, what did he do? And then I noticed he has done every incarnation of a Star Wars video game as the voice of Darth Vader since the dawn of time. So
since the 80s or 90s, he was a young man.
Basically, that's been bread and butter for him for sure. So doing that voice. And I understand because James Earl Jones supposedly has been a stutterer his entire life. Right.
Wow.
And so for him to get to not stutter, he has to know those lines backwards and forwards so that he's ready to go. Like if you gave him a script change or if you gave him like new pages, he would crumble and collapse. He doesn't have the time to rehearse it and get it going. And that's what I know, what I've heard about James Earl Jones. So naturally, if they're going to do a Darth Vader voice in a video game, they need somebody with a really low resonant voice that can imitate James Earl Jones, but doesn't have the issues that James Earl Jones does in articulating those lines, right?
And it's probably a lot cheaper than James Earl Jones. So there's that.
Well, maybe he should have come in saying, I am Emmanuel Lewis from Webster. I demand a higher pay rate on this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. You're right. Much, much cheaper than James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
But his very, very first credit was on a TV show that you also acted on. Murder, She Wrote.
Really?
Yeah, 1987. What year did you do your Murder, She Wrote? Was it?
It's probably like 91, 92.
Early 90s. Okay. So he was mid
80s. 92, yeah. 3, even maybe 93. Yeah. I can't remember.
Scott Lawrence was also in Star Trek Into Darkness, the feature film. Oh, yeah. The one that, JJ, the second one that JJ directed. Mm-hmm. And also one Star Trek video game. He did a video game for a Trek concept as well. But again, voice of Darth Vader. That's huge.
A lot of nerd cred with Scott Lawrence. I thought he was great.
Yeah. Jonathan DeLarco.
Oh, yes. I did not put that together till the very end. When I happened to notice it, because I was looking up Scott Lawrence. And I saw, wait a minute, Jonathan DeLarco.
I was so shocked. I was like, what is he? He actually worked on our show. So I knew Jonathan before Voyager, because I was taking acting class over with Corey Allen and Margie Haber doing audition technique. Mm-hmm. And that's where I bumped into not only Chase Masterson from the Star Trek world, but also Jonathan DeLarco, who had already done Hugh Borg, the character of Hugh Borg, very popular from TNG, a lot of nerd cred there. But he was always making fun of me because when I booked Voyager, I think because he was such a popular character on TNG, I think he felt that he had an in, that he was probably going to book a series regular on Voyager. And when it didn't happen and I booked it, I knew him back in the day. Every time he saw me, he would say things like, "Your ship looks like a spoon," and then walk away from me like that. It became this game that we would play. Like he would say some really derogatory thing about, your ship looks like a toilet lid cover, or saying things like that, it's just to get at me. And so now I get to say to him, you see the karma that you brought upon yourself. You did get on Voyager, but no one knows it's you. You're completely covered up and you're some small little creature that runs around. So I can mess with him.
He
now.
Was great. He was very. I love the physicality.
I thought harder. Maybe they hired a dancer. You know what I'm saying? When you have no lines, isn't that harder to act with zero lines? Yeah.
Yeah.
So DeLarco did a good job as Fantome. His very first credit is a 1987 episode of Miami Vice.
He must have been living in Florida or something, because they cast a lot of Florida actors. Yes.
And we have one other actor who is credited at the end as a co-star, Michael Seamus Wiles, who played Bozal, something like that.
Okay.
Bosaal. He was in a 1982 short film called Divided We Fall. That was his very, very first credit. Yes. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is the alien. Play? He's the alien that was in cahoots with us. He was in our little alliance. And then he did some really bad thing to us, to get that Polaron inverter.
Remember that? Yeah, that's right.
He ended up killing other aliens to get
out of here.
Yeah, and so Janeway boots him. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's Bozal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bozal. Okay.
Bozal. All right. There you go. Well, those are our peeps. Let's jump into this. Let's
dive into this exciting adventure.
Yes. Exterior space shot to begin. Voyager moving at impulse power. Yes. And then we jump right into the mess hall. Nice little establishing shot. Cameras moving. We see Neelix serving the third course. And it's a very, very nice tablecloth there. It's set up very formal.
Very formal. We never see tablecloths in the... No, very.
And look who's at the table. Look who came to dinner. Look who's coming to dinner. Janeway, Chakotay, Paris, and Torres. They're having dinner.
It's a bit of an odd dinner party. It's gotta be honest.
But I want to say this is also a very rare JC/PT shippers moment.
Yes, it is. Yes,
because
it is.
What is this essentially? This is it's basically a double date. Thank you.
For sure.
So this is the penultimate moment for the shippers of both JC and PT to be excited about something like this. What's going on? Because if it wasn't that, Harry would have been there, but Harry's not there, right? I mean, it would have been more people. There would have been more of the main players there, but
it was a double date.
I'm going to say that right there. Okay. Janeway jumps into it. She goes, "My compliments to the chef." The camera then reveals it's not Neelix. It's Seven.
Seven is cooking.
My gosh.
I thought Paris was a little snarky. Paris and Torres, honestly. When Torres goes, "Oh, it just keeps getting better." It was so dripping with sarcasm when she was like,
"Wow."
When Neelix says he'd hang up his apron, Harris says something like, oh, that'd be a real tragedy, looking at Chakotay. And I was like, God, why is everybody so snarky in that? Why can't we just have a nice meal? Why does everybody have to be throwing jabs at everybody?
It didn't play like that. It played more like you were having fun. Like you were, it wasn't like, you know, oh, you stupid 7 of 9. How dare you? I'm going to be snarky to you. I didn't get that at all. So if you got that, I'm sorry. I did not. So I'm okay with that.
Harris does ask for some salt, though, at a certain point. And she's like, you don't need any seasoning, additional seasoning. And she goes, if it's not up to your liking, then I'll just replicate you a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'm like, why didn't he just say yes? That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
I would totally take a peanut butter and jelly sandwich over that fancy white tablecloth.
Yeah, right. And that line to me is her playing around with you, playing back, right? So you can kind of interpret it however you like.
Childish tastes.
Well, or no, I'm not going to say that. You have an unrefined palate.
I guess
a palate that just likes the plain meat and potatoes. That's it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's all. I'm not going to say childish, but still, this is it's just playful, and you can also interpret it as snark versus snark if you want. But I'm not going to go there. I'm going to say it's fine. The minute I saw Jeri Ryan, did you immediately think about the restaurant that she opened in LA? The minute you saw her cooking, that's what I thought about. I'm like, oh my gosh, because she ended up not
marrying
the girlfriend of Brandon Braga any longer, and then marrying a chef who I think at the time was the top three chefs in the nation.
Yeah.
At the time. So,
and chef then they opened a restaurant
called Ortolan. And we had one Voyager Boys dinner and that's the one that I missed. And I'm so bummed that I missed that. Yes, I was super, super bummed. But
it was fun, but I got to admit, it wasn't the same as our normal Palm Steakhouse. There was something nice about the steakhouse, the tradition of like, we would go to the same steakhouse over and over.
We would.
And it was really comfy, which is like comfort food. It's what we're,
That restaurant was our comfort food restaurant because we went there so many times. But still... Jeri put so much time into that restaurant of hers. She's not doing the cooking. Her husband is, and she's not even on the line. She's not a sous chef. She doesn't, you know, prep cook or anything like that.
But she was there.
Because she was the hostess. She was answering the phones. She was managing it. She was, you name it, she was doing it. And she was there on a nightly, you know, if she wasn't working, acting on something, she was there. So,
yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to the ship shake.
Moving on to ship shake. I loved about the ship shake because there was white tablecloth and all this formal dinnerware. You heard this sort of rattling, which clanking. We never hear because the ship is so sturdy.
Yeah.
That whenever we have ship shakes on the bridge, you don't hear any noises. But this one had like glass, you know, china and silverware rattling.
It was cool. Going everywhere.
Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah. I did like it. Janeway hails the bridge, asks for a report. We hear Tuvok. We go to the bridge. We see Tuvok is sitting in the captain's chair and he says that we're being pulled off course by some kind of graviton surge.
Yeah.
We jump back to mess hall. Janeway says, on my way. And she leaves with the gang in tow for the bridge. Exterior space shot. What did you think of that very first visual effect of being pulled into the anomaly? It looked
like a whirlpool in space. And I wrote, why are we flying right at it? Like, who is flying this ship?
This is what happens when you go on a double date with the captain.
Actually, it's not Tom's fault because he's at dinner.
That's what I'm saying.
I
don't know.
Well, we're flying right at the whirlpool. I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, I think what it is we're being pulled towards it. We're trying to get away. Okay. But I will say, because you were on your double date, you really weren't there to kind of, you know, pilot the ship away from
this. This is all Tom's fault. I never thought of it.
Yeah, pretty much. We're on the bridge. And as Janeway enters from the bridge, from the entrance closest to operations, Harry does inform her that we have rerouted all of our available power to the thrusters, but we just cannot break free. And Janeway says, try reversing the shield polarity. Nope, that doesn't work. Another huge ship shake. And we jump back to mess hall where Neelix and I thought it was you for a second
because
I was making notes, and when I looked up, I go, "Wow, Tom just—that's not Tom."
I did too. I thought it was me too.
Yes.
And then I'm like, who is this guy?
Just so you know, we've never had this tall blonde guy that basically is your version of you. Yeah. Why? What? Who is he?
He's in every scene with Neelix in the episode.
Well, exactly.
Moving forward, he's in all these scenes helping Neelix. I'm like,
okay.
Why?
I thought he was security because while you guys are eating, he's standing off to the back. Okay. He's he's not focused on it all or featured while you guys are having dialogue at dinner. But then later, of course, when the ship shakes and everything falls over, you see clearly it's him and Neelix. That's it. Those are the only two people on camera. But I thought he was security at first. Then I thought there's no way because security is always in gold. They're not in red. So why would he be security at this double date dinner? So very strange. Weird. We don't know why. Weird. Yeah.
Don't know who he is, but he shows up a lot.
Yeah, he does. but he falls. Everyone falls to the ground, right? Neelix gets up and he notices that there's no stars. He goes, what happened to the stars? And we see through the mess hall windows, we see a vessel that is approaching very quickly. Mm-hmm. The vessel starts firing upon us and we jump over to the bridge. We try to hail them. No response. Chakotay says, this ship is Vadwar. And we've encountered the Vadwar before. Uh-huh. We know who these guys are. But the interesting thing is that this Vadwar ship also has technology from several different species incorporated into that ship's systems, which is very odd. Yeah. So we're like, what's going on? So another ship arrives and starts firing on the first ship. So the first ship ends up hightailing it out of there. And so we think, whoa, sigh of relief. We've got a friend. But then that second ship starts firing at us as well.
Yes.
They penetrate our aft shields. And that's when we have a little montage of all the things that are being transported off of Voyager, being stolen off of Voyager.
Before they steal all our stuff, I just want to say something for a minute.
Say it.
Janeway says, evasive pattern beta 6 to Tom.
Yeah.
And that we cut out to space just as the new ship comes in and fires on the first ship.
Right.
And Janeway's like, let's get out of here. Evasive pattern beta 6, which by the way, we talked about this in our bonus material about the concept of if Tom was the greatest pilot in Starfleet ever,
he
wouldn't need the science-based captain to come up with strategic moves. He would know the smartest move. But anyway, he waits for her order. I guess evasive pattern beta 6, when we cut out to space, it's like we came to a skidded to a stop.
Yeah.
Backed up. We did like a backup and spin. If you were in a car, this would be like a Dukes of Hazzard move. That we like skidded, we backed up. As we backed up, we spun out and turned the other way. It was a cool move, but I was like, why did Janeway?
You wouldn't know that.
All evasive pattern beta 6. But it's cool though. It's
I loved your description.
Why isn't everybody going, Tom, that evasive pattern beta 6 was the greatest beta 6 ever? Why aren't they doing that?
Because it was awesome. She should have said, Mr. Paris, evasive pattern Paris special. And then you would have done a little thing like that, right? But I just want to say, when you just described the captain being the science-based captain, the way you said that, all I could think of was plant-based. Fill in the blank. So plant-based captain, basically, because you have plant-based this, plant-based that, and you worded it as science-based captain, which is, I love, she is, and I've never heard of her described that way. So I just want to say thank you for.
She's science-based. Tom is speed-based. And he should be taking care of business, which clearly he did. Nobody's commenting on how awesome it was.
I got to watch that move again.
I got to go back and watch that move. Yeah, I've never seen that move before.
I think it's I was writing notes down when that move happened.
It was a good move.
Okay.
Anyway.
Good to know.
Let's go back to your stealing stuff.
Stealing. So the stealing happens. The transporting happens. Transporting off of Voyager onto that alien ship. Cargo bay. You're seeing containers disappear there. Mm-hmm. Hydroponics. All the plants. Everything gone. Engineering. A computer console. And we fire, but the ship ends up going to warp. Janeway says to Paris, follow that vessel. Paris says, nav sensors are malfunctioning. Janeway wants a damage report, loss report. Also wants to know where the heck we are, because at this point, we're in the middle of nothing, right? So we don't know
stars,
up or down, nothing. Uh-huh. Yeah. Chakotay says they took more than 90% of our food stores. That's cleaning out our fridge. They literally, they left us ketchup, relish, and a mustard container. That's
and,
it.
Like the, and the ketchup packet, right? Yeah. Not even a whole.
They didn't even give us a whole.
Not even a whole thing. It's just like a ketchup packet.
They left us the dang packets. I mean, what's up with that? A computer console from engineering emptied three of our deuterium tanks. Paris then says, why would they take deuterium? You can find it anywhere. And Seven says, well, anywhere but here. She doesn't detect any gases, any stellar bodies, or any matter of any kind, except for the ships that attacked us. That's it.
We're in a void.
We're in a void. Tuvok scans and says there's 150 ships within our scanning range that I've detected, but only 29 of the 150 have life signs.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's sad. So that means like that's very sad. They're ghost ships. Mm-hmm. So Kim says that there is another vessel approaching at high impulse. They end up hailing us. And on screen, on the view screen, we see General Valen. And General Valen is basically saying, welcome to the void. And he, you know, he comes off pretty nice. And Janeway is very wary. She's like, okay, you know, I'm ready to defend myself if you, you know, try any funny business. But he says, I'm really impressed how you fought off the other ships. And Janeway wants some more information. He's happy to provide it. And he beams over to us, or maybe he takes a shuttle. We don't know how he gets over, but we are in the briefing room now.
In the briefing room, Valen's in there. He's describing the void to us.
Yeah.
And he's standing by a monitor. I got to say.
Yes.
As he describes the void, I'm looking at the image of the void.
Yeah.
It looks like a giant energy donut. It's like, it looks like a donut. It's round. It's
Dunkin'
got
Donut or Krispy Kreme. What are you Dunkin', saying?
A big, a thick big Dunkin'. And it's got these like donut funnel spikes coming out of it that I thought looked like sparkly sprinkles. So it was like an energy donut with these sparkly sprinkles coming out of it. That's how I would describe Valen's image.
See, your description of the void makes it sound enticing, like a place that I would like to live in.
Well, that's why Tom wanted to fly into it, because it looked like a donut, and he loves donuts. So,
Gosh. But
Valen describes the energy donut, the void, and he says that you get pulled in by these funnels, and it's huge.
But the funnels only go one way. They don't go out. Yes. They only pull in. That's the bad part. Yeah.
He says they've been there more than 5 years.
Oh, my
God. Thinks there's got to be a way out, but he goes, nope.
Yeah.
New arrivals always think there's a way out, but there's not.
Yeah.
And let's see. She says, well, maybe you can help us with food and energy and things like that. And he says, well, I have some tactical data on some of the dangerous predators here, so I can share that with you.
Yeah.
He mentions our photon torpedoes.
Yeah, he wants those.
And by the way,
I know what you thought the minute he says he wants photon torpedoes. I sat there watching that. And I said, I can see Robbie sitting in his chair watching this and going, what photon torpedoes? We've already run out of them. We're at -54 right now.
Yeah.
If you do the count of how many we had in the beginning,
we ran out like three seasons ago.
So we're negative. We're in the negative. With
negative photons, but he scanned them. Janeway clearly knows we don't have any, but she plays along. Like, we're not going to trade, you any weapons. And then Valen, when he says, she says, we're not going to trade, he whispers.
Yeah.
I thought his why not was very spooky, I got to say.
Oh.
He was spooky, Valen, to me. He was
really,
yeah, he was.
Spooky. I didn't get that at all. Yeah. My goodness, it's so funny how, you know, different people interpret things differently.
He felt like a seductive evil devil guy. Come to the dark side, become a pirate.
Evil devil guy.
Yeah, yeah. But Janeway says, no way, I will not compromise my morality. We are not going to trade weapons or plunder innocent ships. These are compromises I won't make. So she says, no way. And he says, we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah. These are compromises you won't make yet, is what he's basically saying. Yeah.
Uh-huh. We go to engineering next. A great tilt down from the,
the
balcony
that
down to the bottom of the warp core.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Steadicam shot. I noticed a lot of Steadicam in this episode, which I thought was a nice change, because we didn't often use Steadicam on their show. So
no, like per episode.
Maybe
would it be
day.
Like maybe one day, right? Or, and there's some episodes we wouldn't use Steadicam at all.
Yep.
Correct?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this one, I think he used it a couple of days, because it was in quite a bit.
You know what I remember more than anything else? Not just the Steadicam operator, but the other guy that's holding the cord to make sure the Steadicam operator doesn't hold, you know, doesn't trip, or just keep guiding him where he, if he has the camera and he's walking backwards, right? There has to be somebody there.
I forgot about that, but back then we shot on film cameras, and there was a video tap so that people could look at monitors and see what the camera was seeing.
Yeah.
But that at the time had to go through
a wire. Yeah.
So there was a grip who would cable, you know, pull all the cable.
Yeah.
And nowadays
they don't do that anymore, do they?
No, there's a remote. It's all wireless. So you don't need a cable guy to you just get your image. I mean, sometimes the image, falls apart and you gotta wait, hey, we lost our image, and you wait for a second, but yeah. I forgot there were cables.
Yeah. And because I took such a long time off from Hollywood, literally my thinking of production is still ancient from the 90s. You see what I'm saying? So when I think of Steadicam, I think of the cable guy making sure he doesn't trip on
all
it.
Gone.
So
all gone.
All gone by the way of the dodo bird. Okay. Mm-hmm. Where are we?
We're in engineering. That great tilt down. Yes. Janeway asked for a report. Horace says that we're using power 10 times our normal rate.
Yeah.
We're not even moving. And
yep.
Energy is just being sucked out of this. The anomaly is draining our warp core, basically. Mm-hmm. So we're going to run out of deuterium in 10 days.
That's not good.
That's bad. Janeway says, shut down all non-essential systems. And we leave engineering trying to figure out what we're going to do. We go into astrometrics. I love that Tom was sitting on the steps in this scene. I just want to say. I was like, Mr. Cool or Mr. Lazy. I'm not sure which, but.
But it's a different move. You don't see that blocking typically. Yeah. So I like it.
It's funny because we've been watching Succession.
Succession, yes.
HBO.
Yep.
And I've commented since the first season on that show that those characters love sitting in unconventional ways. They'll sit in a chair backwards. They'll sit on the floor. They'll sit on tables. They'll sit on stairs. Like nobody sits in a chair. So when I saw this, I was like, oh, that was like a Succession thing. Like I sat on the steps.
You know how with Paramount, it was Gary McCluggage, Paramount Television Group, saying, if you can't get anything right, make sure the hair is right. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there's some HBO exec that's all into like varied ways of sitting. It's like, if you can't get anything right, make sure you sit a different way and a different on a different piece of inanimate object as much as possible. I don't know. Yeah. So,
well, I think on Succession, those characters sit however they want because they don't have to sit like a normal person. They don't have to be normal. Like,
so that's part of the, that, oh, okay. That's part, so of, that's that part of the character, like, and the attitude showing that, look,
we're so rich that
we do whatever we want.
We do whatever we want. We don't have to sit in a chair. I can sit wherever I want.
That is insane. So you take the character's traits and you put it into their blocking as well, which is awesome.
I think that's why I sat on the stairs in the scene is what I'm saying. Like,
Tom, in a way,
was like Mr. Rebel, cool guy or whatever.
Yes.
Like the serious, you know, adults are going to stand over there, but he's Mr. Cool. He's going to sit on the, or lazy.
I think you had your book close by. I think you had your book hidden close to there. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to sit close to my book so I can read in between
reading
takes.
Over there.
That's what I think you did.
Probably. All right. Seven figures out how to predict where the funnels are going to show up. There's graviton forces that show up before funnels do. So we can predict where they may occur. But Seven also says, if we try to go out of one of these funnels, the graviton forces reach these critical peaks and then suddenly they reverse and pull us back in. So we'd have to go out and then hit warp just at the precise moment to get out of these funnels. It's not easy to do. We'd have to get to warp 8.2. So Janeway's like, all right, well, if we have enough power, let's give it a shot. The sooner the better before we lose more, more power that's being drained. I also loved all the blocking in this scene, by the way, I got to say, Mike Vahar. It was simple, but it was elegant. People moved with very simple movements, but it was
organic and it looked good, you know.
Yeah.
And the really other good. Important thing that we have to mention here is that Seven is utilizing these fractal algorithms with Borg sensors. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's really why, you know, why didn't Valen get out? Why didn't the other 29 vessels near here? Why haven't they gotten out? Well, none of them have Borg sensors. So I feel like that's a really important script point here on this one.
That's all right, true.
Moving on.
We go to the bridge and Seven finds one of these funnels forming. it is 70,000 meters off the port bow. So Harry says there's a graviton surge in 34 seconds. That's all the time we've got.
Yep.
Janeway says, take us in. We go in. Basically, we're heading into this thing, ready to go to war. Consoles go are banging. Big flashes, by the way.
Right.
Big sparks and things.
Yeah.
The ship gets thrown. We all get thrown down to the ground. And it's pulled us back in. We cut out to space, but our ship is just tumbling back in.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, this is so telegraphed. It's like telegraphing a punch, because you know, when you're watching this scene, we're trying to get out and this is the beginning of the episode. It's not going to work.
Okay? No,
so it's almost like this scene isn't even needed. We know you can't get out. So anyway,
moving on. We have to try. Story-wise, you got to try.
Yes, yes.
We do hear from on the bridge. We hear Taurus call in. B'Elanna calls and says the warp core is offline.
Offline.
And then we cut to a shot. It's like a low angle pushing in on the warp core. And you see her up in the balcony.
Did you like that?
Or it pulls back from the warp core.
Did you like that?
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. Great shot to go out on the act. We come back. We're in the briefing room. It's almost dark in here. It's almost like power's out. I loved shooting scenes in these kind of darker environments. I do remember.
Because we never do. That's why.
We never do.
Yes.
I think I remember in this scene, it was really dark. And, you know, Robert used to put his lines on the table and on his pad and stuff. And I think I remember in the scene, he had put his line in it, but it was so dark he couldn't see him. It. So he had to learn it. He was like, I've got to
go to my trailer and learn my lines now.
Too dark to read it. Yeah, I used to tape them onto the pad or whatever, and he couldn't do it.
He's asking props for a Sims beacon. Couldn't Chakotay actually hold a Sims beacon during this and kind of glance it across my pad where my lines are taped? That would have been hilarious.
I like this shot though, because Janeway's walking around. She makes a full circle around the table.
Yeah,
basically.
She does.
She hands off. She carries. The shot is panning with her walk, but it pans by everyone who is talking. So yeah. Paris is line, Taurus, Chakotay, Neelix. It just goes, it timed out beautifully. And it was very well done. So
is Harry in the scene?
I don't think he's in it. I know. Sorry. There's plenty of scenes I'm not in. There's plenty of scenes a bunch of us aren't in. Don't cry.
I'm not going to cry.
You're probably in the captain's chair right now.
Yeah, but don't you find it odd? Usually in these type of meetings of informational stuff, Harry's always in one of the chairs, especially if you've got, you know, Neelix is there too. It's like, you got to have Harry there. What's going on?
What is Neelix doing? Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, typically Harry should be there. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Neelix does offer to go out. He's there. He's offering to go out on his own and try to salvage something.
Oh, from some of the other wrecks, right? Yeah, the other derelict ships. Yes.
I did like the space shop at the space. Oh, one last thing.
Yes.
At the very end, the last couple lines, Paris says, well, the vultures are circling. And Janeway says, vultures eat the dead, Mr. Paris. We're not dead yet. I was like, why didn't we do the Monty Python version?
Dead yet?
Why didn't
she? It's just a flesh wound.
Why didn't she do the
money? I'm still alive.
Yeah. We're not dead yet.
We're not dead
anyway,
yet.
Anyway, she literally said it, but all I heard was Monty Python.
I love it. Oh my gosh.
We go out to space. We see our ship in low power mode in space, which has to be the CGI ship, but it was very cool.
It did look
very
cool.
Very cool. Yeah. We go back to the bridge next, and we come out of the set, like the ceiling, dropping down in the front of the bridge. And didn't he do that same move in the sick bay like two episodes back?
Possibly. But again, it's still a cool move. Regardless, I was like, whoa.
It was cool. But I was like, wait a minute. Mike's repeating himself now. Because he blew me away in sick bay when he did that. But now I'm like,
hey, he just did it. But it's a different set, though. He's allowed to do the same move on a different set. Come on.
It was cool. Yeah. It was cool.
We liked it.
We come down out of the ceiling. Cool shot.
Yeah.
And Tuvok says the vessel isn't in range and it's on fire. It looks like it's or leaking gas or something. It looks like the VFX from, was it last week or the week before, that cool ship that was leaking all the
It looked like plasma was leaking from plasma the ship. Leaking. Definitely.
Yeah.
But Harry says, well, it looks like somebody got there before we did. Mm-hmm. Tuvok says there's no life signs. Janeway says scan for ion trails, and whoever did this probably has our deuterium. So there's really nothing left worth salvaging on that thing. But Seven comes up with a little idea. She says, yeah,
of course,
not everything of value has been taken. The warp core has been removed, but the casing that protected it is intact. It's composed of tricesium.
What is tricesium?
Never even heard of tricesium before.
Never said
that
word on our show before.
That's the first time.
And not only have we never said it, but it's a power source.
We can use that as a power source. We just convert it to tricesium, tricesium.
I was like, I wrote down
tricesium.
I don't buy it. I wrote down how.
I don't buy it.
We're gonna use this tricesium made up metal, and it's gonna run our ship. Okay.
Well, if you use a MacGyver type of thing, technique, yes, it'll work. You have to think like MacGyver. And Janeway's like, okay, you know, every little bit helps.
Beam it on over.
Smarty pants, Seven.
We come down a hall next with the wristbands on.
The Sims beacons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seven and Torres are coming down and they come into the cargo bay, I think, where they had beamed the tricesium
the warp core casing.
It looks like kind of a salvaged, you know, broken kind of metal, this cylindrical tube thing. But when they shine their light into it, or as they're looking at it, this creepy, like rodent creature sort of pops in. It's inside of it. And then it runs out and they chase it. They say, stay where you are.
Yeah.
And they look up, shine their lights up on a ladder. He's climbing. This is Jonathan Del Arco. This is Fantome. Yes.
Fantome. Yes. I don't know how you're going to say it. Fantome. Okay.
Yes. This will become Fantome.
Yes.
But he looks like a rodent. The other thing I couldn't tell is I thought his costume was just greasy and dirty, but that's actually like, it was a weird one because I was like, maybe it should have just been skin. Like maybe they shouldn't have.
I thought
had
that
it.
Was. Oh no, you're right. It okay.
It so
you're
looks saying like they should have a jumpsuit, like
almost
like a wetsuit.
Yes,
that looked the same color as his same pattern as the skin. So I was like,
so that's you weird. Think that it should have just been skin
no
instead
costume.
Of that. No costume. Yeah. So a completely devoid old of clothing, prosthetic. Jonathan Del Arco, basically.
Yeah. Okay, I feel like it should have been.
Yeah, because they could have did
talk
body,
about
body
them
paint
like rats,
that.
You know, like they're mice,
like
or rats.
They're vermin. Basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I love the sickbay shot when Fantome, who we'll learn, Jonathan Del Arco is eating out of a bowl in the foreground, super low angle, great shot. His whole physical performance was great. I didn't know it was Jonathan Del Arco.
I know. It's blowing my mind still.
Yeah.
But that's Jonathan.
It was great. He's down in the foreground.
Oh,
they're trying to talk to him, but the doctor says he won't let me get close enough to treat him. The doctor even says, I don't think he has any verbal skills. He's not communicating. Right. So
Harry walks in and says, "So you think my ship looks like a spoon, huh?" Is what exactly. I should have said.
But we end it with they're all very sympathetic with this alien. They you know, want to help him and take care of him. He's very sympathetic. Mm-hmm. They'll look for other members of his species. In the meantime, Seven offers to give him some of her supplements, her nutritional supplements from her allotment.
Yeah, so very gracious of her
heart.
She does. She's starting to have some empathy now.
Have some feelings, some empathy.
Yeah.
We go to the briefing room next.
It's just Tuvok and Kim here.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just an odd thing. So the whole thing of, you know, me not seeing Harry in the earlier briefing room scene, I wasn't so upset once I saw this scene because I realized, oh, Tuvok and Kim are working hard on finding the deuterium nabbers, kidnappers. Yeah. So that's why he wasn't in that other scene.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we did. We found the deuterium. Kim says it's someone we've already met. Now we're on the bridge now next. And it's Valen, General Valen, on the view screen. Yes.
The evil, the super. I made a note here. He basically, he just is so on the nose bad guy. I wish he hadn't been quite so on the nose.
I didn't think he was that on the nose. Oh, I thought he was very helpful in the beginning. And I thought he was kind of okay.
I felt like he was untrustworthy from the very beginning. And I wish he had lightened it up a little and been a little more. See,
I think tricky. He did lighten it up. Wow. But you know, that's so crazy. Wow. Okay.
It's like when Janeway says, well, apparently you killed another the crew of another ship and took it from them. So we want it back. And his answer was, that's not the way things work here.
Oh.
It was like so oozing with bad guy, you know, mustache twirling.
Fine.
I was like,
but when she first says, like, we're not here to trade, we're here to take back what belongs to us. And he's like, I don't know what you mean. I mean, I to me, it just felt like he was playing it at the tone that it should be played. But okay. But you're right. There are certain lines that were a little creepy that he's like, what do you Okay.
Yeah. In this scene, basically, she's starting to experience the reality of the void and the rules around here. People stealing and, you know, stealing from the stealers and, you know, everybody's like pirates here. And, and I felt like she was being tempted into this dark side. This is the scene where she knows she's being tempted.
She was, but she resists the temptation because she could have beamed off. She could have transported everything off of his ship, which means a whole bunch of other things that didn't even belong to us. But when she found out that they weren't ours, she said no. She said, no, we'll just take what our property, the rest of it. So she still has ethics. She still has a moral compass at this point.
She does, but you can see her questioning it. And that's what leads to this next scene, which I love this next scene.
In her ready room?
Yeah, in the ready room. It starts with a cinematic sort of pan across the ready room and lands on her in a silhouette, profile silhouette, looking out towards the stars, dark. And then Tuvok and Chakotay come in. And they basically they're coming in with an inventory, but they want to talk to her about, you know, how they're going to survive and what their tactics are going to be. You know, they're both suggesting that maybe we should, you know, play by the rules of this place and kind of, you know, maybe we can behave a little differently than we would if we were back in Federation space or even in the Delta Quadrant. Janeway does say, I was hoping to find a loophole that would allow us to take actions we wouldn't ordinarily take. And Chakotay says, any luck? He almost did. Any luck? Get Tuvok. Almost did the full. But he did have half the classic, half the Chakotay classic with any luck.
Any luck? Get Tuvok. You're doing it very well as well. Yes, I'm very impressed with your impersonation. I didn't even realize that he even said that. I was so busy writing notes he did say that. Hey, look, and you were waiting for Tuvok at the end, right?
I know. Okay. I was. But Janeway ultimately says, look, I think the solution is to team up with people here and to be generous and to offer them food and medical supplies, defend them if they're attacked, share with each other. Chakotay's like, well, we don't even have enough food for ourselves. How can we share with people? But Janeway's answer is, look, maybe we'll only survive 2 days instead of seven, but we're going to do the right thing instead of hoarding it. And maybe if we combine our resources and we work together, that we can figure out a way, a real solution you know, to solve this problem. So
it's all about collaboration, not competition. Yeah. Collaboration is key.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great Janeway kind of scene, bringing Starfleet values to the void. I love the whole thing. We've got a captain's log here. Janeway says, for the past several days, we've been making every effort to recruit members into an alliance, but it hasn't been easy.
Not easy at all.
We see the first group she's trying to recruit. This is our red suited team with Garon, their leader there.
Garon.
Garon, yeah.
You know what I see when I see G-A-R-O-N? I see George Aron.
George Aron
is right. He's in the house right now. George Aron. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But she's Janeway is explaining to Garon that maybe, you know, when a new ship arrives, that instead of attacking it, bring them in. Every new ship that
help
comes
defend
in.
Them. Help defend them. Defend them, right?
And yes. Bring them into this alliance. And then Garon says at one point, he's like, well,
how many ships do you have in this alliance? And yes, Janeway says, you'd be the first.
So yes,
she
that's
hasn't
it.
Sold anyone on this.
You'd be the first. I love that moment. And then Neelix jumps in. Well, technically, Captain, that's not correct. I joined this 6 years ago. I offered my services. So he tries to, like, you know,
sweeten the pot a little bit for Garon. Yes.
He tried.
But I love his. Do you see his response line? He says, it's a noble idea, Captain, but good intentions are like deuterium reserves. They tend to get lost in the void. Mm-hmm. I love that line there.
Yeah.
But she says, you know, just consider it. She says, consider it. And he says, oh, yeah, I'll think about it. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, and she does give him food and medical supplies at the end of the scene. Yeah. Which is nice of her.
Yeah.
For nothing in return.
For nothing. Yeah. He says, what do you expect in return? She goes, nothing. Just compliments.
Of the alliance,
which is a smart move, because does she really expect? No, I think she expects him to join this alliance. But you know, there's no quid pro quo, no this for that necessarily. No,
but it's
sort of implied, like
right. But there's nothing like sweetening the pot with actual food and medical supplies. That's just here. Take this. Mm-hmm. And now he knows we're not playing. We're serious about this.
Okay, we go to the corridor next. Seven and Janeway are walking and talking.
Yep.
And, you know, Seven is very skeptical about this whole plan to form an alliance. And she says, you know, somebody took my phase compensator. You know, I just don't think we can trust these people, basically. They end up talking and Janeway's sticking to her guns. They end up stopping in the walk and talk and having a very close talky sort of scene. Which I felt like we had gotten away from our close talking, but we're back at it.
I guess it's back in. Yeah. It's a little bit more close talking.
Janeway and Seven were a little bit close.
Mm-hmm.
Janeway, in the end, she basically says, well, I'm really sorry that I gave away your phase compensator. That's right. She says that she had given it, that Janeway says she had given it to the Nigeans.
Yeah, because they needed to repair their sensor array.
So she says, I'm sorry I gave it away. She says this as she's walking away, she sort of tosses it over her shoulder. And I made a note. She sounded like Katharine Hepburn here. Kate did. She was like, I'm sorry I gave away your favorite phase compensator. And she walked away. It's just like, wow.
I'm sorry I gave away your favorite phase compensator.
Yes, she had a little drama.
Straight from black and white film right now.
Yeah. As she walked away.
I love it.
It was very funny, the delivery and the way she was walking and sort of talking over her shoulder as she walked away. We go into sick bay. There's opera music playing.
Yeah.
It is Rigoletto or something, or I don't know what it is. We see Fantome. He's like feeling his chest. He's feeling the music in his chest. This is where I still didn't know it was Jonathan Del Arco. So I was like, oh, what a cool behavior to really kind of express what's going on for this character. Seven is checking on him, you know, how's he doing? Much better. The doctor finally shares that he's named him Fantome because he's such a music lover.
Is that kind of like Fantome of the opera kind of?
Yes.
Is that where they're going with that? Oh, well, he even says after the Phantom of the Opera, a tormented character who is soothed by music.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Fantome, Phantom of the Opera. That's what it's from.
Or did they say Fantome? I don't even know how they said that.
Fantome.
Jonathan's name.
I forgot. But the doctor clearly thinks that Fantome is a really interesting individual. They're connecting. And the doctor says, I wish I could communicate with him. But then Seven says, well, he may not be able to speak, but he can hear. And then she holds up some items and puts a, you know, has the computer make a tone. Like she holds up a tricorder, makes a tone, and then holds up a bowl and makes a tone. And then she just makes the tone, and Fantome, whatever his name is, comes and picks up the one that matches the tone.
Yeah.
And so the doctor's like, oh, he understands that tone means that. I thought that, you know, I could hear the tone.
Yes.
The, you know, when she started playing this game, it felt like such a simple game. I was like, oh, there's two items. There's a high tone and there's a low tone. Mm-hmm. This is going to get more complex, I hope, because that's pretty fundamental.
I hope. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But at least you see where they're, where the foundation of what they're going to do. So it was pretty clear.
Yeah.
We go to the mess hall. Neelix is spreading another tablecloth. Mm-hmm. Again, this helper is there. I don't know who this dude is. There's some guy there helping out Neelix in the mess hall.
Wouldn't that be crazy if there was this crazy plot amongst the showrunners? They're like, yeah, we got to get rid of McNeil. You know, he's so, he's got 2 feet in two boats, 1 foot with the family, with all these kids. And then he's working. Let's put this guy that kind of looks like him on camera just to see how that compares to contrast to him. I mean, like, what? We've never seen this extra in 7 years.
He shows up. He's there.
He's a featured extra.
I feel like it's somebody that won a contest or something, or like bid on a charity or something.
It's got to be what it was.
Put him in all the mess hall scene.
Because that's typically where a Yala would be. You know what I'm saying? A featured extra that we know it's Tarek, and sometimes he has a line. This guy was just front and center. And again, you're right. He probably won a silent auction, something.
Probably something like a charity auction. Yeah, I don't know where he came from. But yeah, Neelix is putting down food in front of them.
Yeah.
He puts a plate down in front of Paris, and it looks like eyeballs. Didn't it? It looked like eyeballs or something. It was weird looking, but I think it was a lychee. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a fresh lychee has that gelatinous looking eyeballs style.
I think it was a lychee, and I think they put something on it black, like a seed or something else.
Oh, okay.
So it kind of had a
eyeball look,
weird look. Yeah. But anyway, he puts down Fetron Risotto in front of, Tom, and he puts down Olean Guava in front of Horus.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Tuvok calls and says, senior officers to their stations. Paris leaves.
Wow.
I felt like this scene was pointless. I did not understand.
There's no reason for this scene to be in there, correct? Nope. It doesn't further the story.
Nope.
It's not even a beast. Well, is it a beast storyline? A little bit of...
I have no idea why this scene was in there.
So strange.
Like at the end, so he puts down a couple of things. They don't really eat it. They don't really like, is it that he was felt jealous of Seven was making the first meal? I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know why the scene was in there.
Well, honestly. Because okay, you know why? Because in the very beginning, your romantic double date was already interrupted. So he wanted to reproduce your romantic date time and give you guys the full dinner. And here it is, interrupted again. Basically. But you're right. Yeah. It doesn't need to be in there. It's odd.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. Anyway, we go to the bridge.
Yeah.
Because there is Tuvok's called us to the bridge.
Yeah.
Janeway just saying funnel. Shields to full. Paris is running in over by you.
Yeah.
Coming in that door.
Yeah. A funnel just opened. A vessel is pulled in, a new vessel. And of course, two vessels are approaching that new vessel. And one of them is General Valens. And Valens starts firing on the newcomer. Now, Janeway is ready to do her little move to start this alliance. She targets Valen's weapons and she hails Valen. And Valen's like, hey, look, I'm not fighting you, Captain. Janeway's like, no. You need to stand down now. Valen's like, okay, this new ship has technology that we can share. Janeway's like, no, we're not going to do this. So basically, Janeway draws the line. Right here in this scene, she's going to protect this ship from being taken or possibly, you know, the entire crew being pillaged. And let's face it, when these ships get pillaged, a lot of times the crews end up getting killed as well. So that's the end of the crew. So Janeway has drawn a line, and Valen just doesn't understand it. Mm-hmm. Valen's all about, I need this, and this is how I survive, and I don't care who is in my way.
I liked when Janeway hailed the new ship, and we see Lokar. Yeah, yeah. And he immediately goes, I surrender. And Janeway's like, no, we're here to help you. I love these guys. They're like the overseers or whatever they're called.
Yes, the watchers.
Love the watchers.
They're so
love
good. Them. Yeah.
He went to surrender. Janeway's like, no, we're here to help you. Can you target that smaller warship?
Yeah.
He said, we're not equipped to fight. So
yeah.
Janeway fires some torpedoes, which we don't have. again, fires some torpedoes. And they don't really work because he must have upgraded his shield since the last time we were fighting him. So torpedoes don't work.
Yeah,
We're having problems now with this guy. We got hull breaches, Harry says, on deck 5 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
Then we cut to engineering, and Taurus is climbing under the rail into the middle of the warp core. And then she goes over to a panel on the railing side and types from the wrong side, like the warp core side.
The opposite side.
Why did she climb inside of the warp core just to work on a panel she could have walked over to?
Strange.
It was a weird.
Strange.
It felt dramatic to me.
Yeah. But she does deliver. It was unnecessary and very bizarre. But she says, we're losing containment. At this rate, we'll be dead in the water in less than 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And our shields are down to 15% at this point. So... Tuvok says we should retreat. Janeway's like, no, we can't do this. And you say, you might want to reconsider. There's another ship approaching. So now we think.
Yeah, we think there's more people.
Yeah. But guess what? It's Garen. It's Emmanuel Lewis Webster himself, all grown up, coming to save us. We're so happy. Yeah.
Basically fires on the two vessels. Valen's shields are down. Mm-hmm. The other ship is leaking plasma. They both retreat.
Yep.
Garen calls up.
But before Garen is on the view screen, Janeway says, get a weapons lock on him, because she feels like
we've been fooled before. Yeah. Yes.
She doesn't get fooled again. And Garen calls her out right when he pops on screen. He's like, why are you targeting me? He's like, well, I don't know your intention. He's like, I just made them clear, right? I just defended those guys that were attacking you guys. So she was like, okay, welcome to the Alliance.
I love this act out, because she kind of walks forward, the camera pushes in over Paris, and it's a and the music here shifted. I really liked
it. Yes, it did.
It felt like Spielberg-y kind of music, very positive. It was cool.
Yes.
Next thing we see is in space. We see Voyager with 5 other ships hanging out nearby. Yeah. And the captain's log says, since Garen and the survey ship became our charter members, finding new allies has gotten easier. The latest prospect is Commander Basal, whose ship technology could help us escape. So now we see in the mess hall, Janeway... her idea is working. There's aliens everywhere, mingling, getting along. It looks like her new alliance that she's created is coming together.
Yep. And she's brought Commander Bozal with her, mm-hmm. and offering him some dinner. Mm-hmm. And he's shocked about fresh vegetables. He's like, what? Who did you raid? You know, so his whole mindset is like raiding. How did you get these fresh whistle? Who did you raid these from? And she says, no, they're replicated. And guess what? One of the crews that joined us, they had technology that has tripled our replicator efficiency. So we've already done amazing things. And Neelix is proud. He says he can feed up to 500 people a day using half the power that it took us a few days ago. And now they sit down to have a nice meal. Mm-hmm. We have a walk and talk is next.
Yeah, it's a short walk and talk. Tuvok is leaving the mess hall, runs into the doctor, and he asks how the patient is.
Right.
And Fantome is
behind, kind of hiding behind a doctor.
They both have a pad. The doctor has a pad, Fantome has a pad.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, well, he's not my patient anymore. It's taken me a long time just to coax him out of sickbay, but he's doing fine. Yeah. And the doctor plays a couple of notes on the pad, and then Fantome plays some notes back. It's like they're talking to each other with these little like
musical tones, right?
Musical tones, yes. Yeah. Oh, and I was thinking at this point, they start talking back and forth and they walk into the mess hall.
Yeah.
And the doctor, as they're talking with the musical tones, the doctor laughs like he made it, like Fantome made a joke or something. And I was like, first of all, how do you make a joke with musical tones? I don't even know how that would work.
Also, the doctor says, he says, it began with a few simple words, but now we're capable of rudimentary conversation.
Yeah.
So, as far as I know, the definition of rudimentary is basic, right? So basic conversation, I guess you can make a joke from that. Why did the chicken cross the road joke? A very rudimentary
simple, yes. Right. But the doctor does laugh. At that point, I was thinking, why don't we use our universal translator? Like, if we've created a language, throw it in there, and then it feels like, you could use the universal translator and it would, everyone. So now he could talk to everyone, not just the doctor who seems to understand.
Yes. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know. Reroute it through the university translator. Okay.
But they come into the mess hall and then our new friend Bosal.
Yes.
Sees Fantome and is like, gross. What is that parasite doing aboard your ship?
Yeah, that's right. He didn't call him vermin. He calls him a parasite, is what he says. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, he does. Yeah, because Janeway says, I beg your pardon. He says,
they're vermin. Excuse me. Yeah. Yes. Afterwards. Yes.
So we clearly see that Bosal thinks they behave like rats. They spread disease. They hide in conduits, steal people's food.
Yeah.
And the doctor is very defensive. He says, you know, he doesn't have any disease. He's very healthy, unlike a lot of other people in this in this void. And he hasn't stolen anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Bosal basically says, I would exterminate all of them. And I suggest you do the same.
Yeah. He says, if my sensors could detect where they are on my ship, I would exterminate them. Yeah. It's just pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
You do see that. The reaction on both Janeway and the doctor's face that this is ridiculous, right? So they're not happy.
Yeah, she says, you know what? If you don't like these guys, as long as they follow our rules, we could bring them on Voyager. And and Bosal is like, well, if you could find them. And she says, well, now that we've got Fantome's physiology, we can get a transporter lock. We'll beam them off your ship. If you don't want them over there, we'll beam them over here.
Yeah.
And he agrees. So, yeah.
And he joins the Alliance at this point. So
he's
one of the newest members of the Void Alliance to get out. Mm-hmm. All right. Where are we?
We go into space for a moment. We see six ships. So we see Bosal's ship has joined. So now we're in engineering and Torres and Garen are trying out this new emitter relay. Janeway walks in. She says, how's it going? And Torres begins to answer, pretty well, but we just need to, and suddenly it pops, blows up.
Yeah.
So I thought the timing of that was very funny. Very dry, funny.
So Garen basically says that we have to establish this huge shield bubble around all the ships, but we have no way to compensate for the graviton stress. So that's the problem. That's the issue. They have to be able to.
And Jamie's like, well, what about a Polaron modulator? Could we do that? And Torres says, nobody in our alliance has one. We'd have to build it.
Well, she says, we've been trying to build it, but so far, nothing.
So Jamie's like, okay, maybe we can trade for one. We go into astrometrics next. And my favorite aliens, the hierarchy, are there eavesdropping. And they're listening and they hear they're eavesdropping in on this conversation we just saw in engineering.
Right. The hierarchy hears it because Janeway says,
maybe we could trade for one or find a new ally who has one.
So when it cuts to astrometrics, we basically see the aliens you love are eavesdropping on the tail end of Janeway's sentence.
Yes, exactly.
So they're watching.
They're watching that. And then Tuvok comes in and says, hey, what are you doing? You're not authorized to be in here.
Yeah.
And he explains, well, we're making a very valuable contribution. We devised this new surveillance system, basically a spy system.
Yeah.
And it even bypassed Tuvok's security measures. So these guys are very smart and they were spies. I mean, that's kind of how we met them before. They were like watchers or observers. Right. So they brought some of their technology onto Voyager.
Yeah, it is valuable. That is a contribution, because Loquar says we can observe activity on any ship in the void without being detected. I mean, that's the ultimate, like in business. If you were able to jump into the boardrooms of all the companies that you are basically in business or competing against, that would give you an advantage for sure. Mm-hmm. And so he talks about how
Tuvok says, why are you watching these guys? Because they're in our alliance.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be spying on them. And Loquar says, well, they shouldn't be hiding their ale. So it's kind of a comedic out.
It is comedic.
He sees they've got, you know, some beer and they haven't been sharing it with everybody. Anyway, one of my favorite scenes is this next one. We go into sick bay and there's more of these void aliens.
There's more of Jonathan DeLarco's people.
Yes. And they are playing music. Like it's a great shot around the bio bed, the surgical bed.
Are they on the clamshell? Clamshell bed?
They're sitting on it kind of playing all these notes. And it's just really beautiful.
Yeah. It ends up being this almost like a musical piece.
Yeah, like a concert. Mm-hmm. And Janeway comes in and she's just mesmerized and listens to it. And when they finish, she
applauds.
She starts applauding. And my first thought was, do they even understand applause? Like they may think he's
about to
attack.
Wouldn't that be funny if as she does that, they all like scatter. They're like, oh my God, because they hear this clapping sound. They don't know what it is.
Yeah. But Janeway thinks it's beautiful and asks if they made it, you know, if they composed it. And the doctor said, well, they did, but it's not really a composition. It's a conversation.
Yeah.
Janeway says, well, maybe this kind of communication suggests they have a language. And the doctor says it could be telepathic. We don't know. But
they're comfortable using musical notes to talk to each other. That's for sure. Janeway does ask if they happen to be native to the void, these Jonathan DeLarco aliens. And Bardo says that they told him that they were born there. So, yes, this is where they're from.
And I love this moment. It's one of my favorite scenes because it's a real like exploration moment of like Janeway, really the wonder and awe of seeing a new species that's just beautiful in some ways.
Yeah.
And it's just a reminder of what an amazing kind of discovery adventure that we're on.
And a reminder that she's a science-based captain as well.
Yes, she is.
Yes.
But Torres calls in, Captain, need you in engineering. Basically, Torres says, we've got this fully compatible Polaron modulator.
Yeah.
And we says, where'd you get it? Bosal says, the Kinjal frigate. And Janeway's like, oh, great. They want to join the alliance. And Bosal says, no, they're not interested. And Janeway's like, wait a minute. How'd you get this then? He said, I traded. What'd you give them? She asked, I don't want to answer. I don't answer to you. She says, wait, did you steal it? And he doesn't really answer.
No.
She says, we're returning it.
And he says, no more use for it.
They don't need it.
Janeway's like, you don't know that. He's like, yeah, I do. And that's when she figures it out.
She's like, you killed them. That horrible. Is a violation. You're out. You know, we're not going to like use this. Take this with you.
Yes. We would be accessories to murder if we end up using this technology. So she basically boots Bosal and his Polaron modulator off the ship and says, see ya, you're done.
Get out of here. You're not in our alliance anymore.
Yeah.
It's a very strong act out. She is crystal clear about her morals. We go out on the act there. Come back. We have a space shot. We're down to three ships now. We were up to six.
Right.
Now we're down to three.
Yeah, the Jelinians and the Kralor left with Bosal. Mm-hmm. So the guys that were drinking the beer, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So we didn't need them anyway. Right. So
didn't need them.
No, but all they had was beer.
This is a nice scene with Chakotay and Janeway, JC forever. It's a walk and talk. He won't give up on her. Basically, that's what this scene is about. You know, she's questioning, did I make a mistake? And Chakotay is just not giving up on her because it's JC forever.
JC forever. Okay.
Yes. But Janeway says, you know, okay, I guess everyone's pulling together to make up for my mistake. And Chakotay says, well, they have to. That's in the Federation Charter. So he's got her back. He's trying to make her feel better for kicking this guy out.
Yeah. Well, now we're in Astrometrics. Mm-hmm. And Tuvok is basically there with Loquar. Loquar is the one who recorded a tactical conversation that took place between Bozal and Valen, I think, is who he's talking to. Yeah.
Yes.
So you see Valen talking, saying, "Don't underestimate Janeway. I've been in a battle with her twice." Bozal says, "Well, then you know her tactics. I have two other ships. We can take Voyager's food and weapons if we work together." So Bozal is trying to form his own alliance to, you know,
and clearly going after Janeway.
Yeah.
Janeway.
She booted him.
She realizes, like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah.
You know, we can't afford another battle with these guys.
Right.
Tell B'Elanna, we don't have time to test that modulator. We've got to do it now.
Right. Because they're going to attack within the next 48 hours. They're going to make their attack. Yeah. So there's not enough time for B'Elanna to run field tests on this modulator that she has to put together, that she has to create.
Next, we go to sick bay and Janeway comes in. Our Fantome and his pals are having this very fast conversation. I don't know what they're saying, but I love, we were handheld. Things are getting, dramatic and the energy's going up here. The stakes are getting higher. Janeway comes in. "Sorry to interrupt your conversation. We've got a situation. Your friends," she tells the doctor, "your friends can join us, but they need to be aware of the dangers here. They can leave with us, but they need to be aware of the dangers." Doc translates. He goes, "Nope, this is their home. They want to stay." Janeway says, "Well, where should we transport them?" And he says, "Any ship will do. They're nomads."
He says, "They want to help us now.
They want to help us now." Exactly. Mm-hmm.
The montage of the work of preparing to get out of here with the shield bubble and everything, right? So that's the prep. They're going through all the last second preparations. So we're now on the bridge, and Kim reports that there's a funnel forming in grid 4. There's a graviton surge in 98 seconds. Janeway says, "Okay, let the other ships know. Take us in, Tommy." Tommy says, "Aye, Captain." And
"Aye, Captain."
Yes. And then Tuvok reports that Bozal and his fleet are approaching. They're charging weapons. Janeway says to engineering, she wants to know the status. Torres says, "Look, I need 2 more minutes. Janeway says, "You've got one." That reminded me of the original series where every time Kirk asked Scotty for an estimate and Scotty would give an estimate, Kirk would always cut it in half. And she's saying, "Look, you got this much time." So, yeah. All right. So the surge is about to happen in 50 seconds. Janeway says to the Alliance ships, "Begin firing at your designated targets." And at that point, we do see some of the firing happening. Tuvok does say that we have penetrated shields on both of the vessels. And then that's when Janeway says to the doctor, "Initiate." So the transport happens of Jonathan DeLarco and company. Yes,
we go to the transporter room, and there's all Jonathan DeLarco and his pals, the void aliens, on the transporter pad.
Yeah.
And Doc says, "Okay, Captain, acknowledged." And he says, "Goodbye and good luck. Energize." And they beam away.
They beam into the engine room.
Yes, Seven ship. Says transport the complete. Rooms. They're in the engine rooms of the other ships.
Yeah.
That's where we sent them.
Yeah.
And
very smart.
We're back on the bridge. Harry says, "We've got 30 seconds, Captain." Janeway says, "We need that modulator," to Torres. Torres says, "We need a few more seconds." Getting very dramatic here. Mm-hmm. We have a cool space shot of Voyager being attacked as it heads through the funnel or toward the funnel.
Yeah.
And I loved in that space shot, you see the attacking ships start to blink.
Yeah.
It's like
something's going on. Yeah.
You know that those void aliens are in the engine room and they're shutting down the engines or whatever they're doing.
Yep. On the bridge, Harry says, "We're receiving a hail from Valen's ship, audio only." Janeway says, "Let's hear it." And all of a sudden, you don't hear Valen. It's just the musical tones.
Exactly.
Yes. Of Fantome, clearly. And Janeway turns and Janeway says, "What is he saying, Doctor?" And the doctor says, "Well, mission accomplished. Fantome shut down power on Valen's ship." And of course, that's what saves the day. Both the attacking ships are disabled by Fantome and Fantome's brethren. So, yes, it's a good day for Voyager and the Alliance.
There is a shot when in the transporter room, and doctor says mission accomplished, and we go to the bridge and Tuvok says confirmed. Bozal's ship has lost all power as well.
Yeah.
And then the camera off Tuvok pans over to Paris in a really tight close up.
Yeah.
And Paris says, "Who says gremlins in the engine are a myth?"
Right.
Anyway, I remember this shot. Chrissy Shee's head almost exploded.
Why? It was
such a focus shift to go from Tuvok I remember it's a hard shot. That one moment, it flies by so quickly, but I remember the focus shift was like massive from way in the back of the bridge to way in the
way
front.
Way tight on you.
And it's a blind shift. Like it's yes. on the pan. He just yeah. has to hope that he lands yeah. on the right, yeah. the right focal length. And I saw that, I was like, I remember that shot. We must have done it like 15 times.
Rest in peace to Chris.
No. Yeah, I know.
Rest in peace yeah. to Chris Ishii. But you were right. And I just remember there were times, Chris, when you put him under that type of duress where it's very difficult yeah. to make that focus shift, he would make it known. Like he would see, you know, he would speak up. He would like, guys, this is really, you know, he would basically say this is not easy. Okay, guys, you know, I mean, he would get frustrated because he was very good at what he did. Very, yes. very good. But when you put him under that type of duress where you've got
that
to go.
That was a tough shot.
As soon as I saw it,
yeah. I totally remember that.
Yes.
I was like, oh, poor Chris.
Every time. But when you talk about crew members.
Was he on the camera with Doug? Doug was the operator on him? I think it was Doug.
Yes, Doug Knapp was operating, right? And then focus.
Both of them. It might have been Doug,
but he would focus pull for even if Marvin was on the camera, right? He would focus pull for whoever. But again, he was probably the only crew member who ever would stop and speak out and say something, you know, typically everyone's sort of like, oh, I know my place. I'm not going to make waves. But when something was difficult and people were asking a lot of Chris would be vocal.
Yeah,
he wouldn't be disciplined for it because, you know, he was a good worker. It wasn't like he was a slacker.
Well, because he delivered. He wanted to deliver quality.
He wanted to be perfect, right? Yeah. So being a perfectionist at what he does, sometimes he would get frustrated. And he was like, gosh darn it, you know, guys, you know, got to help me out a little bit on this. So, yeah, Chris.
Chris.
Yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Anyway, in that scene, it's very tense. That's why there was that cool hard shot with the
right.
Very tense because we're going to head through this funnel.
Yeah.
Voyager plus the three other ships in this big, big bubble that we're all in.
Yeah.
The ships are in formation. We're 40,000 meters to normal space, 20%, 10%. Tuvok says, Janeway says, do it. And they drop the shield and all three go to warp. And we see them fly out towards the stars. Very cool shot.
Yeah. We escaped.
We escaped. We go to the transporter room. Galen and Lokar are there. Oh, Galen. Galen is Lokar's. Wait, who is Galen? Goran. Fuck.
Oh my gosh.
There is no Galen in the cast list.
This is the wrong. Yeah, this script has the wrong. It's Garen. It's got to be Garen. It has to be Garen because let's figure this out. It's the red uniform aliens, right? Right. That's Garen. Lokar is the big hippopotamus guy, right?
Love him.
And who else joined us?
Valen was the bad guy,
right? So he's not with that group.
No, and then there was the guy that killed people, and
he got kicked out, right? So, but there's whatever. Another ship with us, isn't it? Voyager and three other ships that get out of here, or was it just Voyager and two other ships?
I don't remember,
but
let's just call him by the character name.
Let's just say
it's, I think it was Garen.
Yeah, I think it is too. Yeah. But okay. We're in the transporter room. Janeway basically congratulates everyone and saying it was a privilege to have you as allies.
Yeah.
Garen's like, well, I never believed we'd escape. Lokar. He's like, well, then why did you join? And then Garen says, I keep wanting to say Galen. And then Garen says, Captain Janeway is very persuasive. And the food was good. that's a big seller right there. The food. Yes.
But we leave good friends. We've made some good friends. Janeway stuck to her guns. They're all beamed away. Yeah. And
Janeway and Chakotay have a last couple of words there.
Yes. They are very close, by the way, when they have these last words.
They are.
She says it's almost shippers. Like being part of the Federation. mm-hmm. Uh-huh. There's a moment there.
There was a moment.
Anyway, after their very close JC moment, they walk away. I put heart, because it's sweet. What is your lesson?
I was going to say it to you. But your lesson Jinx. Is.
What is your lesson? You go first.
But yeah, my lesson is collaboration always trumps competition.
That's exactly what I said. Working together is more effective than competing.
Yeah.
Working together is the lesson here.
Yeah,
for sure.
Agreed. 1,000%. What is your rating? I'll ask you that. My
rating, I enjoyed this episode. I liked the Jonathan Del Arco void aliens. I thought they were super cool. Some of my favorite. I love the hippo aliens, those guys. So all in all, I give it an 8.0. I give this a pretty good rating. I know.
Wow. I'm not going to go that high. I'm going to go 7.7, but still good. Still good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This was a good one.
I agree. And what's the captain's and admiral's rating?
The captain's and admiral's average rating for the void is 8.0.
Ah! Oh, you nailed it.
That's the first time ever.
Okay.
That is the first time ever.
I'm going to say you nailed it and you nailed Mike Vahar.
Mike Vahar.
I want you to go. When you're in Salt Lake, you pick up a lottery ticket.
Okay.
Pick up five of them. Don't just get one.
Good.
Five.
I'm feeling good
five
today.
Five is the way to go. Yes.
8.0. Wow. Average. Yep. That's pretty cool. Okay.
That's very cool. Super, super duper cool.
Okay. So what is next week's episode?
Oh, next week's episode is part one of a two-parter, Workforce Part One.
That's right. I forgot that was coming up. Okay.
It's coming up.
Excellent.
And yeah, I'm pretty sure you and I both know that one of those was directed by
Roxanne.
So we don't have to guess that name since we know that. Mm-hmm. But yes, Workforce Part One. All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Robbie and I's recap and discussion of The Void. Join us next week when we will be recapping Workforce Part One. All of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.